the USRI report, as always, on a Friday morning. And this morning, we are joined by USRI Research Associate in Tembavoyu, Linda. Good morning.
Good morning there.
And thank you for joining us on this Friday morning. Tell us, certain states vulnerable to state capture. What makes a state, or what makes even departments or partments of a state vulnerable to state capture?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely in South Africa, the starting point was the infiltration into the nervous system of South Africa's constitutional state through the president at the time, Jacob Zuma. And the scale of corruption or state capture that took place during Jacob Zuma's presidency sort of enabled powerful individuals, institutions, companies and groups to influence South Africa's policies, our legal environment, our economy, to benefit their private interests. And this has, of course, had and still has a negative consequence for our economic development and the provision of public services. And I think that, as you are saying, there are certain features of political life which actually may have facilitated this kind of political behavior that increased the risk of state capture in our specific context. And without losing sight of the fact that the conditions for state capture in South Africa definitely had to do with Jacob Zuma's lack of moral capital, but there are also other factors. So, for instance, the unregulated or weakly regulated and secretive political party financing, which can make party elites susceptible to forming what we call symbiotic connections with sectional interests, is one of the factors. But also the legacy of many colonial and apartheid and post-apartheid and post-colonial states, such as South Africa, results in many transitional states being hampered with dominant political elites, weak mechanisms of accountability, and an underdeveloped civil society, which can make a state very vulnerable to state capture. And this is mainly because concentration of political power is often coupled with centralized economic power. So a fundamental shift in the normative values within a state always provides for an opportunity for private interests to shape laws, policies, and regulations of the state to their own advantage. And so those are just some of the factors that also contribute to making states susceptible to state capture.
The Zondo Commission on State Capture, of course, rolling along, and many people expecting, to yield its conversations or its discussions that it did. Now, mm-hmm. The major takeaway from the Zondo Commission this week, following Barbara Hogan's testimony, as it relates to the interface of the state, what can we learn from that?
Well, I think the events preceding Barbara Hogan's dismissal this week, which you've had insight to, much like the testimonies of Mqobisi Jonas and Pravin Gordhan, are important terms of reference because they allow us to evaluate what dismissals and appointments of ministers during Zuma's administration were actually about, and this is what the commission is about itself. And it sort of led us to try and find answers to questions such as who is the president actually accountable to? Who's the ANC as a ruling party accountable to? And is the president then accountable to the party before the state? And whether the ANC should put its own interests before the interests of the state? All these questions about who's loyal to whom? And also, is it Zuma who's on the trial? Is it the ANC? And any attempt at answering any of these questions has sort of revealed that all the lines are very blurred. Nothing is very clear. The situation is very complex. And if you look at how Zuma has positioned himself as being synonymous with the ANC during his administration, and how the ANC then continued to position itself to be synonymous with the state, these are all very central particularities of the debate. And I think that the major takeaway here is that state capture, which we can describe to be the alleged undue influence of Zuma's associates, the Gupta family, in the running of the state for private gain, has caused serious institutional ruin in the public sector in South Africa, where the state has been sort of unable to function in such a way where it can serve broad social interests, or to make decisions that might actually achieve long-term developmental goals, because the state itself has now become bound to a very particular and especially narrow set of private interests. And public institutions are, as we know, associated with a number of constitutional principles, which include separation of powers, judicial independence, and a state's responsibility to provide security and services. And once state institutions are weakened, it becomes very difficult to implement and protect constitutional rights. So I think that the Zondo Commission has really served to remind us that all forms of corruption damage democracy. It attacks the legitimacy of institutions of the state with direct consequences for our democratic consolidation and economic transformation, but as well as the relationship between the citizens and the state, which people often overlook. Because when public institutions are threatened or undermined, it often leads to a malfunction of the state, opening up opportunities for constitutional crises to develop. And Zuma's infiltration of state institutions, such as public enterprises, you know, an example, ESCOM, almost broke the institutional spine of our state, because remember now, the relationship between government and public enterprises is one where government is a shareholder representative with oversight responsibility, meaning that in principle, state-owned enterprises are run independently, and they shouldn't be agonized with the burden of being bullied or intimidated by government. And as a shareholder, government is not meant to politicize or intervene in due decision-making processes of SOEs. However, many testimonies in the Zondo Commission this week sort of demonstrated many instances of government making an attempt to influence the political trajectory of these enterprises. So take, for instance, Hogan's testimony, when she says that the president instructed her to adjudicate the case of the resignation of the then ESCOM CEO Maroja by determining the merits of Maroja's version and then the board's version regarding the events leading up to his resignation, which according to corporate governance framework is actually a very unethical instruction by the president at the time, as it renders the principle of separation of powers unimportant or impotent, so to speak. So I think this is what we've learned this week.
You know, Ntumbuvuyo, that next week, of course, will be an interesting one, with Praveen Gordhan expected to be at the commission, and let's see what he has to say. But the question that many South Africans are asking, and if you can conclude, of course, on this point here, is that the commission's role in restoring the rule of law, which ultimately people want to see and the country actually needs, will the commission do that, or at least be a first step in that direction?
Well, look, I think the Zondo Commission is really playing an important role in highlighting the most important philosophical foundations of our constitutional democracy. It is serving to remind us that if public representatives deviate from their mandate or abuse it for purposes of their own interests, or even worse, for criminal purposes, then the foundation of representative democracy, you know, becomes violated. And if these abuses become widespread, or if the contractual relationship between citizens and the state continues to be violated, then the foundation of democracy is under threat as a whole. And I think that the Zondo Commission is serving as a very meaningful role in reminding us about the restoration of the rule of law, but its role is very limited because it doesn't have the power to prosecute, and it has very limited accountability powers as well. So we've also seen institutions such as the Office of the Public Protector and the IEC and the Judicial Service Commission, which are very active in our democracy, and how they played a very important role in the restoration of the rule of law, at least promoting the rule of law.
Ntumbuvuyo, Linda, thank you so much for joining us on behalf of Asri, and have a good day.
Thank you so much.